If homicide is your hobby, may I recommend a surgical knife for a nice, clean, quiet murder? I'm William Castle, and this wheelchair is just to rest my tired nerves after producing a picture like this one. We are so sure you will find it such a shocking and startling experience that we are offering a money-back guarantee when you come to see Homicidal. At the height of the suspense, there will be a fright break, an interval during which you can quiet your nerves. If you are too frightened to see the end of the picture, your full admission price will be refunded. Time to go downstairs now. Got a date to carve a corpse.
When there's no more room in hell,
the dead will start a podcast.
Is the Fright Break. You hear that sound? It's the sound of a heart. Frightened, terrified heart. Is it beating faster than your heart or slower? This heart is going to beat for another 25 seconds. Allow anyone to leave this theater who is too frightened to see the end of the picture.
Everybody, and welcome to No More Room in Hell, number 58. This is Mike, and joining me, as always, it's Mr. Venom. How's it going, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, fans of twist endings. Yeah, we have a very twisted episode coming. I was actually really digging on these movies, so yeah, great picks, for once.
Yes.
Wow.
I love to hear it. All right, also with us, it's Derek. What's up, Derek?
Michael just like, we just did, it's ironically that William Castle keeps coming back into me and Mike's lives frequently. Because I know Mike did a 22 shots show on William Castle, and I did that whole fucking series with Duncan on Podcast Under the Stairs on these movies. Well, yeah, thank you for that, Mike.
And you know the funny
thing, I watched The Tingler last night, so
I was randomly talking to JP, and I told him what movies we were doing. He's like, "Didn't you do those with us on 22 Shots?" And he like looked it up, and I did. And the reason I forgot, I think, is because I think this was in the midst where I was on like a few of their shows in a row, but for whatever reason, on that specific episode, I only joined for the feature reviews, not the
episodes. Yeah, I remember
episodes,
that.
So.
Yeah. I remember that. I got pissed with him because I did the episode after that one, and fucking, I had to do like the what we watch, and I'm like, I didn't watch anything. I thought I was just doing the feature reviews.
Yeah, I don't even. I think it was a Moodsless show.
Like, yeah, this was one of the one of the two shows Moods was out for, I think.
Oh yeah. God! Just Jeremy and JP.
Yeah,
the new guy.
Weird dark. And, yeah, Mike was on one, and I did one. I forget, maybe they did another one with somebody else, but I forget. It was a weird period.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like, a good couple of years ago now. We'll be talking a couple of William Castle movies later on for our feature reviews. But what's new, guys? I mean, I'd say, it's been a while since we recorded our last episode, but nowhere near close to like how the gap between 56 and 57. So it doesn't feel like that long. Like, we still had a couple like postponements on this one, but it's
but not
like
as bad as like the last one.
Yeah, exactly. Here we are. But what news been going on? Anything to report? baseball season's about to start. I'm probably the only one that cares about that, although not really, because the A's are in a predicament. So
I'm a week and a day without a cigarette.
Nice. Very good.
Nice. I'm going to the movies for the next four nights in a row.
Yeah, I was thinking about going to the movies.
So I know a couple, obviously, that you're going to be seeing. Late Night with the Devil, Immaculate, and what else?
Let's see. So Immaculate tomorrow with Sydney Sweeney. She's actually going to be there.
Oh, boy.
Then Sunday is Late Night with the Devil. I'll watch that before we record the Fresh Cuts episode. Monday night, I have passes to go see one of those Scream Unseen presentations. Basically, it's a brand-new horror movie, a 2024 horror movie that has not been released yet. But they don't tell you what the movie is. So the nice thing is tickets are only $5 usually, and you're seeing a movie before it officially comes out. So that's always cool. So I have no idea. I'm hoping that it's something like Sting or maybe Abigail, something along those lines, because I know both of those are going to be coming out in April or May. So hopefully maybe one of those, especially Sting, because anyone who knows me knows I fucking love giant spider movies. It's literally one of my favorite subgenres of creature feature, giant spiders all day long. Derek knows well. He's actually bought me a couple of those movies. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully it's Sting. If not, oh, well. And then the last movie is Tuesday night. I'm going to a premiere screening of Godzilla Kong 2. So, yeah, that's my next four nights at the movie theaters.
So you're skipping Ghostbusters this weekend?
I'm probably not going to see Ghostbusters for a couple of weeks. I still need to see Kung Fu Panda. Yes, I don't care. Shut up. I love cartoons. Ooh. And I fucking love Jack Black. So I've seen every Kung Fu Panda in theaters, but I'm really behind because my wife got sick. We were going to see Kung Fu Panda last week when it was released, but then she got sick, so we decided to stay home. So now we have to see Kung Fu Panda this coming week, and then we'll probably see Ghostbusters the week after that. So,
quick
yeah.
question. What's your favorite Kung Fu Panda movie? Part 2?
Ooh, oh man, that's a tough one. It's definitely between 1 and 2. I do love 2, because, shit.
Gary Oldman is that bad guy, the peacock?
I guess you gotta put if you're gonna put a gun to my head, I would probably go with the first one, only because that's when we're introduced to all the characters. That's when you learn about everybody. Blah blah blah. I adore the second one. That peacock villain was fucking spectacular. I put 1 and 2 pretty much right on a par. But like I said, gun to head, I'd probably lean towards the first one.
I can't hate that. Yeah, you need 1, 4, 2. You know, so. I guess
exactly. But no, 2 is, I mean, 2 was such a beautiful sequel. And the art design in the second one with all of, like, the Chinese lanterns and everything else, just, it was fucking amazing. Yeah. Probably my favorite one as far as theater experience. Because the second one had, you know, lots of really bright colors and explosions with all, you know, with the cannons and the fireworks and everything. So that was definitely my favorite theater experience was that second one.
Mike, what about you?
I'd be shocked if you've seen one. Not counting.
Yeah, I have not seen any of them. I've probably seen bits and pieces of whatever one was playing on the TV if my kids were watching it, but I've never seen one.
Oh, come on. Part 2 has Van Damme.
I like that.
Those movies are legit fucking great. I mean, if you're a fan of old Hong Kong movies, if you've ever been a fan of, you know, cartoons or CG animation, and then just Jack Black being Jack Black, which is always worth the price of a ticket. I think those movies are great. Admittedly, the third one was a little bit of a slip. Now, I still really, really enjoy it. It's a great movie, but, you know, compared to 1 and 2, it's a little, you know. And then I'm not holding up too high expectations for Part 4. I haven't heard any great glowing reviews for it. It's already been out a week and a half, so yeah. I'm just going to see it to be a completionist more than anything.
Yeah, hey, man. Excuse me. Wow.
I did grab one of the ghost traps from the theater last night. The popcorn ghost trap collectibles.
I saw that.
Pretty
cool.
I like the design. It's designed pretty well, and it does just a little part of it lights up when you hit the button to make the trap open, and it does have wheel so you can, like, wheel it. I wheeled it across the kitchen floor and did the thing. But
I'm hoping that Tuesday when I go to the Godzilla Kong screener that they actually have the cups and popcorn buckets. They're definitely going to be there Thursday. I already have tickets to see it again on Thursday anyway, but I'm going to the premiere on Tuesday. So hopefully on Tuesday they have the cups and the popcorn tubs. But if not, I'll pick it up on Thursday. But yeah.
You go to AMC, right?
Three cups. AMC. AMC, if I can use my pass. If not, then I'll go
so
wherever.
You're getting – I think they have the Slimer ones, right? And the Regal has the Dark Trap.
I think Cinemark has the Slimer ones.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I remember seeing Slimer at AMC.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I really didn't expect them to still have it because I remember back when they did the screen popcorn buckets for that promotion. I think the difference is the screen buckets. I think they made them available for sale like before the actual movie came out, and this time they decided let's wait.
Yeah, you could have bought them online. Yeah, it was a bad decision.
Yeah, it was sold out. So, like, this time, I didn't know they changed the system. So, when I went in, like, I got there about, like, 10 minutes before the movie started, and I just kind of walked up to the concession stand out of curiosity. And they had, like, one on top of, like, the counter as a display. I was like, hey, you got any more of these? And they're like, yep, we got them in the back. And
I'm trying to figure out I'm going to go see Tuesday because there's so many movies. So I go see Sydney Sweeney naked?
I mean, and if you ask us on Tuesday, we'll have a better idea because I will have seen everything by then.
Well, I will say this, like, because I am still like a trailer watcher, and when I watched the trailer for it, I was a little worried that, like, not necessarily that would be a bad movie, but I'm like, okay, it seems pretty standard for like what kind of story they're trying to tell. But since then, I've heard...
I heard something like the most fucked up.
I've heard glowing things about it from like people that aren't going to fuck around and just say it's good unless they really think it is. So now my interest is more peaked. So I'm probably going to go Sunday because my Saturday is just too damn busy. I don't think I could fit it in. But Sunday, I could probably grab like a morning screening.
Yeah, I might try it because the thing is if I can... Because if I go and go see Late Night of the Devil, I got to travel to go see that one. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I will say travel. Travel for us.
Maybe I'll go see Bolt because it's $7 Tuesday that day.
You know? I was originally thinking about doing like a double feature day, but then I was just working out my free time this weekend. It's going to be hard. So that's why I went and saw Late Night with the Devil on Thursday because I was like, let me get that out of the way. The one I want to see the most, I'm going to do that first. That way, if anything, I know I've guaranteed that I've seen that this weekend. And then
I could have said it today, but I wanted to make sure we got this podcast done, you know.
You're dedicated to the craft. I appreciate it.
I want to add to the curse.
Yeah. If we weren't recording today, I definitely would have gone to see a movie, which would have made it 5 days in a row at the theater. So.
Yeah.
I have a problem.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe I would have done it too, just because I would have said, hey, now I got a free night.
The curse.
The curse is strong. But since we're talking about kind of what we plan, and are watching now, I guess we can transition to what we have watched, like as we usually do to open up the show. So, Venom, do you have some things that you would like to talk about that you have seen?
Yeah, all right. The first thing I'm going to talk about today is a movie that's actually been out a little while. I'm a little behind on this one. I think this has been out for a couple of months at least. I'm trying to find the release date, and I'm not seeing it. But anyway, this is one of the few shark movies we've gotten this year. Usually we get a decent amount of independent shark movies, but one of the only ones, this and one other one is all I can really think of for sharks in 2024, and this one is by far the better of the two. So this one is, of course, No Way Up. Like I said, it's been available on VOD for at least a month, maybe more at this point. This one's directed by Claudio Fa and written by Andy Mason. It's the story of a group of people who are on an airplane. The airplane crashes. The airplane crashes in the ocean, ends up sinking into the ocean, but inside of the cabin, there's like a trapped pocket of air where, you know, the few, like maybe about a half dozen survivors are, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do. And then, of course, sharks show up and, you know, hilarity ensues from there. So, yeah, I wanted to bring this one up because this was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I'm not sitting here saying that this is a 10 out of 10 by any stretch because it is an independent film. You know, sometimes some of the acting performances might be a little bit sketchy, but overall, I really enjoyed this movie. Like, all the characters were likable, even the ones that were kind of acting like douchebags, because that's their character, but that's fine in this particular situation. I thought that, you know, it's definitely, this movie definitely goes with the mentality of less is more, because just like with Spielberg's Jaws, you don't really see the sharks a lot in this movie. They just kind of glance by every now and again, and even the attack scenes aren't ultra sharky. You know, they're like really fast, usually like tearing off a leg, something like that. But just to, you know, to see these people kind of come together, figure out what they're gonna do. You know, at one point they think they're being rescued, but obviously this is a horror movie, so plans don't go the way they hoped. And, you know, the movie ends up, I mean, it's a little bit of a convenient ending for it, you know, for the survivors. But at the same time, you know, like I said, the journey was cool. For the most part, I enjoyed the performances, as I've already said. The effects were fine, since there's not really a whole lot of shark action in it. There's not really a lot of gore. Like I said, maybe a severed leg and a broken bone here and there. But overall, like, the movie is not exceptional in any way, but it's solid in every way. And when you watch as many horror movies as we do, it's hard to find a movie that you can't really nitpick about. You know, everything that it does is solid. Nothing is exceptional, which is why this movie probably won't end up in my top 10 at the end of the year. But for whatever it's worth, I had a really good time watching it. It's 90 minutes exactly, so it's a quick watch. Not nearly as much character development as you think you might get. You know, it kind of gets into the action fairly quickly. Yeah, overall, you know, if you're looking for a horror movie that maybe doesn't have as much gore and works more on tension than scares, I think No Way Up is a pretty good way to go. Have either of you guys seen No Way Up?
I have not yet, but sounds interesting from the way you described it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
I thought you saw it. My bad.
I was going to throw it on because the premise alone seemed like just that right mix of, like, ridiculous where – kind of like you're describing, like, even if you don't come away going, oh, that was a great movie, it's like the premise alone is enough to make it entertaining and potentially fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I read the synopsis before I watched the movie, and I thought it sounded ridiculous. Like, how does a plane, you know, crash into the ocean and somehow keep its cabin pressure and oxygen and everything else? But the way that they did it, it made perfect scientific sense. And yeah, like I said, there's just really nothing I can nitpick about it. I enjoyed it. I love the characters. The little girl was great. You know, just about, I mean, I can't think of one bad performance in the movie. And that's saying a lot for an independent horror film. So, yeah, I highly recommend this one.
All right.
All right.
You're up next, Derek.
I haven't watched anything really new for horror because, let's face it, there's a lot of new shit that I like to watch, and it's mostly not horror. But I did get this. Now, speaking of toys, like Mike was talking about, like, Ghostbuster popcorn holders. I've fucking got my taxes back and bought the Subspecies box set from Full Moon.
Nice.
And it's like, I can't wait to, like, I have it in the box itself that it came in was, like, crazy. But then it comes in, like, this wooden coffin. And it's fucking huge. And it comes with all the movies, and it comes with a little Radu action figure.
Radu!
Yeah. But, yeah, so I watched a few of those. I watched Subspecies 1 and 2. And, man, Subspecies 1 has some, like, I still love it, but some of the, like, the outfits people wear in that movie are fucking hilarious. Like, Angus Scrimm's fucking wig in the beginning. It's fucking hilarious. Like, it looks like the creature from Masters of the Universe movie with the white hair. you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks exactly like that hair. It's fucking hilarious. But, you know, I love, like, the stop motion of David Allen's, like, creatures in it. Which, you know, big ups to that. But, yeah, Radu is, like, the main reason to watch that movie. And then part two, it's even better because then it adds, like, more, like, lore. Like, you get, like, his mother who's a mummy, which is fucking awesome. And just the effects and makeup are fucking awesome throughout them.
Nice.
And, you know, it comes with a soundtrack, too, which the main theme for Subspecies is, like, one of my favorite themes ever for a movie. It's fucking awesome.
But yeah, more horror box sets should include the score, man. That should be just common for horror box sets.
Yeah. But you're familiar with these, right, Venom? Subspecies?
I believe it or not, it's a little bit of a blind spot for me. I've seen the first Subspecies once, many, many moons ago, and I've never seen any of the sequels. It's not that I didn't enjoy the first Subspecies. I actually did like it. You know, I watched it. It's got to be at least 20-25.
Yeah, for like a directed VHS movie, it's like way better than it has any right to be. It's like
exactly, yeah. I do remember thinking that this is better than some stuff I've seen in the theater. So yeah, I did enjoy the first one. I just have never seen any of the ones since then. So you know, maybe with the box set, you know, and new, I'm assuming new transfer, everything looks nice.
Yeah, yeah. And the main reason, like one of the main reasons I got it is because Part 4 was never released the Blu-ray before, and it's, like, the first time in Part 5.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's why I got it. Plus, you get, like, the spin-off movie, Vampire Chronicles, or cool. Vampire Journals, which is, it's actually not the best, I'll be honest. But, you know, but you have to kind of watch it, because there's some characters that come in, like, Part 4 that connect it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, good stuff. Mike, Full Moon.
Nice.
I know.
did you have to buy it directly from Full Moon? Is that what you were
saying? Yeah. It's a Full Moon exclusive item. Dude, free ship. Yeah, go ahead.
I think Tubi has like a Full Moon channel on there, or like a category.
it has all of them on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of like Venom. I have seen the first one. And I remember, like, liking it okay. And for whatever reason, I just never watched the other ones. But I know they're, like, available. Like you said, they're on Tubi. Maybe I should, like, dig into them just to fill that blind spot.
Maybe. Yeah. I have an idea. Oh, yeah. Saving that
oh, boy.
For a few weeks.
Franchise retro.
Yeah.
Man, I don't remember the last horror movie I even bought. I've been buying, like, non-horror. I don't think I've bought a horror movie in 2024 yet. I bought the Clerks box set. I bought 12 Monkeys 4K. What else? I got the Ghostbusters 4K, Ghostbusters Afterlife 4K. I legit don't think I've bought a horror movie this year. Holy shit. Okay. I'm going to the store tomorrow.
I just got Poltergeist 4K. And it's not really a horror movie, but I did get the Aliens 4K.
Yeah, I've been buying like a mixture. I actually got the Criterion of Richard Linklater's Slacker because he's like one of my favorite directors. Nice. So I've been buying a lot of non-horror shit too.
Days of Confused, man, one of my favorite movies ever.
I honestly just haven't been watching a lot of horror outside of what we've been doing for Fresh Cuts because...
Yeah, Zone of Interest.
There just isn't, like... I've watched so many good non-horror movies, and, like, starting with when we took our time off from Fresh Cuts to prep, between that and through, like, when the Oscars aired, there was just so many good non-horror movies to see in such, like, that time period that, like... And the problem is, it's like, or no, it's not a problem, but you're watching all these high quality movies from other genres, and then you start browsing around like to look for like horror movies, and you're like, I don't want to watch this fucking
Like,
this shit that doesn't look like it's going to be good. Like, I don't want to force myself through it just to say I'm watching a horror movie, you know? I know
exactly.
There's something that hit Shudder today called You'll Never Find Me that got a pretty good review, I think.
You'll never find me.
Ebert website, and they're usually pretty tough on movies, so the fact that they gave it, like, a good review has me interested. I really didn't know anything about it. I hadn't even heard about it. I heard nothing about it until...
Richard Roper's nephew was involved with it, probably.
You said that was on Ebert's website? Even when he was alive, his reviews were... Like, he gave a glowing review to Species. I found that episode while we were, when I was researching for our Creature Comforts episode. He gave Species a glowing review. I couldn't get over it. I'm like, what fucking movie did you watch?
He probably just liked the titties, I guess. I don't know.
The best.
Y'all like titties.
the best was fucking JP. Like, it was on like that mini shots. He had their review for Scream. And then they had their review for Scream 2. And they were saying, like, everything that they should have said for Scream 1, for Scream 2. I'm like, what?
That's awesome.
All right. Let's see. What have I got up first? I actually have a TV show. It's a little bit new, a little bit old. It's what I hope and should be probably the final spinoff from the Walking Dead franchise. It's the Rick and Michonne show, which, to my surprise, is pretty fucking good. Like, I am shocked. So this is basically, for anyone that actually stuck to the end of this didn't even happen at the end. It was when Rick blew up that bridge and he got airlifted from a helicopter.
But from the woman.
And they were supposed to make Rick movies. Yeah, the woman, she, Pollyanna McIntosh, I think, is the actress's name, and she was Jadis from the Trash Heap people. Turns out, like, she was working for this big military outpost called the CRM, and that's where Rick's been, and he's basically been broken as a person, because you get the backstory that he tried to escape a few times, but they're just too powerful. And then Michonne went to look for him, and that's where this show kind of picks up. Now, I think it's a limited series. It's only 6 episodes, and I think the 4th episode just aired. So, judging from what I've seen so far, I'm like, how the hell are they going to wrap this up in 2 more episodes? But then again, when they say limited series, it could just mean, oh, we're just testing the waters to see, like, the ratings and the reception for it. I actually think it's been good, but I've always kind of had a soft spot for Walking Dead because I'm one of the few people that stuck around to the end, so I want to see, like, just how it ends. But, I'm enjoying it so far. Like, again, I think I took so long off of The Walking Dead that, like, it got out of my system, so coming back to it is kind of nice. You don't have, like, the bad taste of all, like, the dips in the series that, you know, you had at the time. And I just like the story of this, and I like the idea of the CRM, like this big, huge kind of like military safe place where, you know, it's kind of like the recurring theme of like, oh yeah, we'll keep you safe and you can live in like what the best version of like the new world is, but it's going to come at a price and a cost, and things start to unravel, of course.
Oh, so it's like Land of the Dead?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. Or, yeah, even Day of the Dead in some aspects, but for sure. But, yeah, so I would say if anyone was a fan of Walking Dead at any point, like, check this out just because, hey, I think we're going to finally get a finish to the story. But,
of Rick Grimes, that dirty motherfucker.
Will he live to be at the end of the series or not?
With Michonne's cookie.
Michonne got a cookie for him. Alright, back to you, Venom.
Alright, now that we're back from 2017, the last time people cared about The Walking Dead, let's talk about something new. Anyway, the next movie I'm going to talk about is a found footage film, another subgenre of horror that's not getting a lot of attention in 2024. This one, there've actually been a few found footage movies, but
nothing, you know, exceptional has been released yet, found footage-wise. But this is one that came out a couple of weeks ago. This was going to be a candidate for fresh cuts, but I actually called an audible and decided I didn't really want to talk about this movie because, unfortunately, my friends, this movie is the tale of two halves of a film. The movie in question is Frogman, a brand new film released earlier this year. It is, like I said, found footage. The basic synopsis is three friends in search of a legendary frogman basically go out to the area where one of the guys saw the frogman when he was a child and actually snapped a picture off of him. And now it's like, I don't know, it's something like 15 or 20 years later. And him, his sister, and one of his, or not his sister, a couple of his friends, basically, they go out back to the area where he originally snapped that picture, and they start to do an investigation, and the movie just kind of, spirals from there. The reason I say this movie is like the tale of two films is the first half of this movie is not only dreadfully boring, the three people that we're following through the entirety of this film are complete douchebags. All fucking three of them. Not a one of them are likable. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Horror filmmakers, if you're fucking listening to my voice, if you're going to give us a movie that only has two or three characters in it, can you make at least one of them fucking likable? Is that too much to ask? Because I got to sit through half of this fucking movie watching these three dipshits that I don't give a rat fuck about, fucking walking around the woods, at night with terrible lighting. And, the first half of this movie is such a drag. But then there is a catalyst event in the movie, and I'll just say it because it's not that much of a spoiler. They find a fake frogman. Once they find the fake frogman, the rest of the movie then picks up. Then the tension is there. The story takes a little bit of a twist. It turns out that there's a little bit of a local conspiracy going on around the frogman. Like, the second half of this movie is legit really fun, tense. Like, there were a couple of scenes where I was legit on the edge of my couch, waiting for something to jump out of the darkness, this is a movie, and the movie's not that long. This movie is an hour and 17 minutes long. That's it, but it still felt like it was 3 hours because of the first half being such a drag, so slow, and dealing with three people that I just don't give a rat's ass about. But by the time it gets to the end, it works its way back around. There's a cool mutation in the movie. Someone in the movie touches a certain substance that they maybe shouldn't, and what ends up happening to that person is actually pretty fucking gnarly. Frogman, found footage fans, I don't. This isn't going to come as a strong recommend. This is going to come as a mild recommend. And I love found footage, my friends. Even bad ones, I tend to really gravitate towards. But I just can't forgive this one because, like I said, the first half of the movie, you're dealing with these three idiots, these three quote-unquote friends that seem like they don't like each other in any way, shape, or form. So if you can get through the first half of the movie, the second half has a lot of cool set pieces and sequences and cool effects, a little bit of practical, a little bit of CGI. It actually does come together by the time you get to the end. It's just a matter of if you can make it to the end. Like, I actually thought, I was halfway through this film, I was ready to quit. But because it was a candidate for fresh cuts, I'm like, well, I got to power through this. I got to watch it. And I am happy that I did power through it because all the great stuff is in the third act. But like I said, if you can get through the first half of just the unbearable characters, terrible dialogue, annoying situations, bad decision making, like if you can get through all that in the first half of the movie, there is a lot in the second half to enjoy. So that's my caveat for Frogman. First movie, the first half of the movie sucks. Second half of the movie, pretty damn good. So take that as your warning. If it sounds like something you can get through and you are a fan of found footage, go ahead and check it out. Another thing about this movie is that the main camera is a fucking 25-year-old camera. The kid who's returning to the site who originally caught the frogman caught a picture of the Frogman, basically brought the exact same camera. Rather than bringing a technologically advanced camera that can get a beautiful clear shot, he brings the same camcorder from 1998, a fucking VHS camcorder. So you're dealing with VHS quality for a lot of this film. It's not the only camera, thankfully. Some of the other people actually are using their cell phones or body cams or whatever the case may be. But the main camera is a 1998 fucking camcorder. So video quality is also going to be an issue to some people. Now, obviously, with found footage, we can, you know, we forgive a little bit of grainy film because it's supposed to look real. But this one, that's just one of the millions of decisions that I hate that the main character made of taking that original camera instead of getting something fucking advanced that where you could actually get a nice 4K video of the Frogman, not a fucking VHS quality. So, like I said, there's good and bad things about the movie. If you can make it through the movie, I think you'll, for the most part, enjoy it. If you can't get through the first half, I don't blame you because I almost couldn't get through it myself. So I'll leave it at that and ask my co-hosts, has anyone seen Frogman? I think Mike has, right?
Yeah, I have. As far as the camera goes, do you, because I think I saw it like before, a little bit before you did. So the detail on this is escaping me. Is the movie time stamped because as far as when it takes place, because I assumed, and this is just my assumption when I was watching it, that it was just taking place in a period where that was like the technology of
the movie's set in modern time because they have cell phones, they all have iPhones. So yeah, a modern day movie. See, and there actually is a line. There actually is a line in the movie where the guy says, I purposely brought the camera, the same camera that I had back in 98, because I don't even remember the reasoning behind it. He just thought it would be cool, I think, something along those lines.
Boy. Which is
just such a stupid decision. Exactly.
Well, so, the real
reason.
That's
what I mean. That's the level of intelligence that you're dealing with this movie.
Somehow,
so,
Palpatine if you can get back.
So if you can get through the poor decision making and just bad characters, like I said, I think there is a lot in the second half. Go ahead, Mike. I cut you off.
Yeah, I mean, this is where me and you just we have a difference of preference. I don't mind annoying characters. I don't mind douche. Yeah. Like, it doesn't. I don't need a character to root for. I don't need someone to be like a protagonist. I just figure, if these are the characters they want to tell a story about, I'll watch it and see how things play out. I do agree that, like, some of the decision, like, I don't think a lot of the dialogue, like the three of them, was necessarily all that interesting. I thought the writing struggled a little bit in the first half to make them interesting. To me, like, because to me, I can make bad characters interesting. But these characters, there just wasn't a lot of interesting things about them. But I agree that the movie, once we get the fake Frogman, because I was trying to put myself in, I was like, it seems like they're trying to make this specifically in the throwback style of like the Blair Witch era of found footage. Because obviously, in modern times, it doesn't cost a lot to get, like, at least a decent-looking camera if you're going to make a found footage movie. So to me, I thought, as I was watching the movie, I was like, this had to be a deliberate decision to film this like it's a throwback. Otherwise, why would the character ever make the decision, like, not to have a more, you know, modern technology camera? Because it's just, it's not like 20 years ago where, yeah, it would be several thousands of dollars to have something HD, but now it's like a freaking iPhone can record better quality than what they
have. I mean, you can get a 4K GoPro for $200. What the hell?
Yeah.
Fuck. They made a few movies before iPhone.
The smart decision was making this like a sub 80-minute movie, because I felt like they knew that, like, our resources are limited. We can't, once we get the Frogman stuff, they're like, we can't make it over the top and too elaborate because we just don't have the resources to do it. So it's a lot of like sleight of hand with the camera angles. It's you get like a quick shot here to give you enough of an idea of what the actual Frogman stuff is. And like you said, there was a cool sequence with the friend morphine, I guess, or several stages of morphine into something. Yeah, by the end of it, I was entertained by the end of it, but I definitely agree. You know what? I bet on a second watch, your critiques of it would probably shine for me too. I think it was just on my first watch, I got caught up in like how much I liked the second half or the third act that I was maybe forgiving of the first half more than you were. But yeah, I don't think we're that far off in like our overall thoughts on it though.
Yeah, definitely. I like I said, dinner time? Me. What the hell?
That wasn't me.
It was my water bottle.
Oh, okay. to go back to my original point about the characters, I don't necessarily need someone to for, but I need someone to care about. I need to care. There has to be, because if I don't care about the characters, then what are the stakes? There are no stakes. I just want to see them all die. Like, a movie like Hereditary or A Quiet Place, where we actually care about everybody in the movie and you don't want to see anyone die. To me, that is so much better than just filling a movie with a bunch of douchebags that are just going to be fodder for the killer. You know what I mean? I want an emotional attachment to my horror movies if I can. I want the stakes to actually mean something. And with Frogman, since I didn't give a rat's ass about any three of them, I'm just like, well, I don't care. Fucking kill them all. It doesn't change the movie for me. I say I'm not as forgiving as Mike, I guess, is the main point. Mike, we both agree that the third act is great, that the second half of the movie, for the most part, is really solid, really watchable, really fun. But that's where me and Mike differ, is that I don't forgive and forget. When the movie is over, I don't forget that the first half sucked. And that's always going to stick with me. I'm glad the movie left me with a good taste in my mouth, though. I'd rather the first half suck and the second half be awesome than vice versa, because that's awful.
How long is this movie?
It's only an hour and 17 minutes. It's less than 80 minutes. It's a quick watch.
So it's not like the 3 hours of The Outwaters?
No. And thank you. That's another great example. Another found footage movie filled with a bunch of douchebags that I didn't give a rat's ass about. So no matter how great the gore and how great the kills were in the third act, I didn't give a rat's ass about anybody. There's no stakes. That's what I'm talking about. I like your stakes in my horror movies. And I'm not talking about Porterhouse. I'm talking about S-T-A-K-E-S. You know, like I said, I want to care about the characters. Now, is there a place for like a slasher flick filled with douchebags that are just there for the killer to cut into pieces? Hell yeah, there's a place for those movies. And sometimes I even enjoy them. But for the most part, especially as I get older, I'm noticing that it's the movies that have an emotional attachment that really, you know, have some kind of effect with me, that they affect me in some way, be it positive or negative. So, yeah, I guess that's just the difference between me and Mike. He's more forgiving than I am, but that's okay.
Only if they're Ozzy's Dungeon, then we forgive. Because everyone in Ozzy's Dungeon sucked. But yeah, they were entertaining.
They're like the Blumhouse movies. These Blumhouse movies that have been coming out lately, they have the standard horror hierarchy, you know, of the family moving into a house, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, if none of them are likable, what the fuck do I care? What do I care if they all die or they all survive? There's no interest. There's no stakes for me. And like I said, it's me personally. I know this is my thing. I'm sure most horror fans aren't as bad as I am when it comes to forgiving bad characters. But like I said, I'm a 50-plus-year-old man, my friends. I've been watching horror movies for 40-plus years. And, yeah, the tropes get more annoying and the shitty characters get more annoying the older I get. So let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
Right. Back to you, Dave.
Hey. Yeah, speaking of found footage, I watched all three of those new VHS movies. I had like a marathon. Man, that was actually a fun... I'm glad I stayed away from some of those for a while. Now, I will admit, 99 is my least favorite, but I still enjoyed a lot
That's
of the stories.
That's everybody's least favorite.
But I still enjoyed a lot of the stories from it. Like, I loved fucking Ozzy's Dungeon. That was pretty fun. The weird one was like... Yeah, you know, they were fun, like, little, like... But 85 was pretty fun. I loved how it was, like, connected to one story connected to the next story later on. It was kind of funny.
Yep.
It was like a continuation. That was kind of fun. And then fucking... The fucking wraparound with the little thing in the science museum.
Yeah, Jesus.
Corey? Oh, that was great with, like, the aerobics at the end with the dead bodies.
Yeah. The VHS franchise is a weird one because they'll put out a chapter that I absolutely love, like, let's say VHS 2, and then they'll follow it up with VHS Viral, which is just a gigantic step down from the one previously. Then they'll put out VHS 85, which is fucking spectacular, potentially my favorite in the franchise. I love every single segment. The wraparound I hate, but I honestly, I haven't liked a VHS wraparound since the first two movies. Since it was, you know, back to the original of just breaking into someone's house and watching a bunch of videotapes. Every wraparound since the second movie has just been, you know, the VHS viral one with that guy following people around L.A., like, that was stupid. VHS 85 with, what was that, the DEA thinking that they were taking down a drug cartel, but then they just find a bunch of dead fucking bodies. I didn't like that, especially the way that one ended. The ending, the twist of that wraparound just upset the fuck out of me. And then the last VHS was... Or wait, there 99. First 99, that one is probably my least favorite. I call that VHS for kids because almost every single segment is kids. Kids are the main focus of every segment in that fucking movie.
Yeah.
And that bugs the shit out of me. This isn't a kids movie, okay? This isn't Goosebumps. It's fucking VHS. But then the last one, which I forget the year, what was it, 94 maybe, whatever, the name of the last one. I did enjoy that one. It's not nearly as good as 85. I thought Gigi Saul Guerrero's segment with the Mexican death god I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that one a lot, actually.
And then the last one, the one in hell, that was the most basic bitch vision of hell I've ever seen in my life.
The one from the Deadstream guys? That's the one from the
Was
Deadstream
that the Deadstream guys?
Yeah,
that's probably
yeah.
why, because I didn't like Deadstream that much. I'm in the minority on Deadstream. A lot of people like Deadstream when it came out a couple of years ago. I do not. And once again, it's the same issue with Frogman. There's only one guy in that movie, and he's an absolute fucking piece of shit that I don't care about. So why am I watching him run around a haunted house for an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Admittedly, the movie is good. Like the sequences, the scares, all of that was good, but I just hated him. And he's the only human in the fucking movie. He's literally the only person in the movie other than spirits and monsters and whatever else.
Yeah, he's the Logan Paul of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Man. And then we don't even get the satisfaction of watching him fucking die. Ah! How are you going to give me a 90-minute movie with an absolute douchebag... And then I don't even get the fucking pleasure of watching him die at the end. Fuck you. Kids vs. Aliens did that shit to me, too, where they set up that one kid as, like, the worst fucking kid in the history of teenagers, and then we don't get to see him die. God, fuck you, filmmakers. If you're going to set up a character to be an absolute asshole douchebag, someone who's going to turn into a guilty pleasure kill, let us see the fucking kill. How's that sound? God damn it.
Wow.
Sorry, Derek. I went off on a tangent.
Venom rant number 900. Back in my day.
Oh,
we
my
fucking, get off my lawn, VHS.
What's funny is I don't feel like I'm bitching about old man stuff. I sound like an old man, admittedly, but I feel like there's some validity to what I'm saying.
No, I get you. You know, like, with Deadstream, it's like it's all that it's pretty much like a Logan Paul type fucking YouTuber that you're following. That doesn't appeal to you, but I kind of see the amusement in that because it's the kind of stuff that's from my era too. Sure. But I can see why somebody wouldn't like that as much as I would.
I like the movie. I just didn't like him. I guess that's the best
that's
way
weird,
I
can put it. He's the director, too. It's fucking hilarious. He's
The movie is well made. I like, you know, for the most part, the story progression, the character arc, all of it. But it's just him. If he's going to be the only character, I don't want to watch it.
I did like the special guest appearance from Gollum. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, hey, I'll take that. Absolutely. But no. Like I said, Mike probably likes Deadstream more than I do since he's more forgiving of shitty characters. But
I actually did watch that too recently. Like, nice. I had like a found footage, like Shudder fucking, because I marathon.
Nice.
I'm not too big on Deadstream. No.
The VHS, I know you kind of mixed on those two.
Well, for VHS, like, to be honest, I think other than Viral, I think I have generally positive opinion on all of them. Yeah. Obviously, it's to varying degrees. Like, there's a couple of them are, like, really standouts where I like the whole movie or, like, all the segments. But I think Viral's the only one where, like, if that would have been the end of the franchise, it would have been sad to see it go out on, like, such a low note. But besides that, I think all of them, I can find merit in at least, like, some of the segments. So
yeah,
I'm overall pretty positive on the franchise.
Yeah, Viral's my least favorite, too. And, like, fucking, and there's, like, but I still like one segment of that movie, too. But other than that, it's, like, fucking, where, like, VHS 2 is probably my favorite. I love all the segments. Even, like, the zombie GoPro one fucking grew on me over years.
Oh, that's a great one, yeah.
No, yeah, but, you know, like, the most basic one of that one. But it's grown on me, like, you know what I mean?
I just right before the last one came out, I did a rewatch of the entire franchise. Because before I did the rewatch, I would have agreed with you guys that Viral was my least favorite. But it was definitely 99, because with Viral, I liked the skateboarding one. The skateboarding segment in the ravine I thought was cool. Even though it's kind of nonsensical, I still thought it was kind of cool. And then even the magician one, which is, I know, the one that most people groan about the most, I somewhat enjoyed that one just because of how different it was. You know, it wasn't a slasher. It wasn't a monster. It was a magician with a cursed, you know, cape, I guess. It was just so different that I enjoyed it. So Viral is easily my second least favorite, though. I mean, 99 by far. And like I said, I only say that because every segment is a kid's segment, and it bothers the shit out of me.
Ozzy's Dungeon. Double
yeah,
dare.
Exactly. I mean, that one, big time. But, like, the Medusa one, kids, just...
And it's weird because that's, like, the wraparound, too, and it's not even the last story.
Exactly.
It's weird.
Yeah, so. It is, yeah. But overall, I'm right there with Mike, though. I love this franchise. Overall, I absolutely love the franchise. Obviously, some entries are stronger than others, but, you know, I'm a found footage guy, and I'm an anthology guy. So if you're going to combine anthologies and found footage, oh, my God, that's shit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's cream-worthy right there for me.
Now we just do the whole VHS franchise and what we watch segment.
I think we covered, like, what, the last three or four on Fresh Cuts. At least since 94 we've done them all. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hail Rama.
I think whatever has come out since 2018 we've covered on the show.
I can't wait for 2010 or whatever. Sci-fi.
All right.
All right, my next one up is actually, it was going to be Frogman, but since Venom already got to
Frogman,
and we talked about it, I'll sub something in here really quick. It's called Blood Ride, and it's a horror anthology on Netflix. Have either of you guys heard about this or seen it?
I've seen the poster, but I haven't watched it.
It ended up in my algorithm. Netflix does this annoying thing where, like, all this international stuff and I don't know if it's because of the rights where, like,
it's all stuff on international,
it's not available in the U.S. until, like, further down the road, but, like, where I'll have all these, like, international shows from, like, 2022 and 2023 in my feed, and I'm like, where the hell was this stuff when it released? Because I would have liked to watch it when it was new, but Blood Ride is actually all the way back in 2020. It's a horror anthology. I think it's 6 episodes. I am assuming there was only ever this one season, unless there's other seasons that just aren't out here yet. But the kind of intro, the setup is like kind of corny. It's just this bus driving, and then all the people on the bus are like the subject of like each story. And so like each episode, it'll be, you know, one or two of the passengers are the main characters. And I, the thing about this is I would call this kind of like mid-level as far as the horror scale. It's almost like if you took, man, I'm trying to think. It's not like teen level. It's more like, I think it's typical anthology where it's like, oh, like the main person's learning some kind of lesson at the end, almost like a Tales from the Crypt, but not done, obviously, in the EC Comics style. And I believe this is I was initially thinking Goosebumps, but it's not, like, as kiddie as Goosebumps. Maybe if, like, it was Goosebumps for adults, where it's not,
I love,
like,
fucking Goosebumps.
Yeah, it's not – these aren't going to scare people, but I think some of the stories are actually well written. It's a Norwegian production.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's actually pretty good. Out of the 6 episodes, I've seen 4 of them, and I have 2 to go. But they're – and most of the stories are only between, I think, like – anywhere from a half hour to 45 minutes, so you don't have to invest tons of time. Like, it's not like some of the anthologies or some of the Netflix shows where every episode is at least an hour, so it just takes forever to get through them. But I'm having fun with it so far. It's good enough to where, like, I wouldn't mind if there was, like, more seasons of it just to get more stories, because I have a soft spot for anthologies because I like the kind of grab bag nature. And anthologies, if there's one thing to be said, they love to recycle, like, past anthology stories. And that's not a problem because, especially when they're from different countries, they kind of get adapted to, like, their local lore or their customs. So there's always different ways to recreate time-honored classic stories. And I think Blood Ride, the writing does a pretty good job of that in this. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, and that's the funny thing too, because when it comes to especially Netflix over other, maybe Tubi as well, because their library is so extensive, most of us, all our algorithms are going to be different. So, like, I could be like, hey, Blood Ride shows up on my front page. Why haven't you guys seen it? And you're like, it's never even come across my screen. So I have to manually search for it. Or if one of your top categories is like international TV shows, it might show up on that, or horror TV shows, it might show up on that, or just do a search Blood Ride for it. And I am recommending it. So check that anthology.
Blood Ride. Rated X.
All right. Back to you, Venom, for our final round.
All right. So my next movie is going to be my turkey of the month, my absolute avoid this movie, unless you like really bad movies, and in which case, check it out.
Ozzy's Dungeon.
I was just talking I was just talking about how, you know, there's a place in this world for slasher movies with a lot of shitty characters just getting bumped off by a, you know, fairly charismatic killer. Well, this is not one of those movies, my friends. this movie is called Camp Pleasant Lake. Wow, what a shitty movie this is.
I wonder what that's trying to be like.
Exactly. This is directed and written by Thomas Walton. It stars Michael Parr and Jonathan Lipnicki. Remember him?
Wow.
And also Bonnie Aarons, Valak the Nun. So we actually get some horror DNA, some horror cred in here. It's basically just the story of a camp that's being reopened after 20 years. Sound familiar? Camp Crystal Lake fans? Basically, a campsite that had a tragedy occur there 20 years ago They're go ahead and reopening it, but they're reopening it not as a summer camp, but as a horror experience camp. One of those places where you go camping and, like, you know, fake serial killers stalk you in the night and, you know, you find body parts and you have to figure out the mystery and things like that. This is a lot like that. The only difference is there's a real killer on the loose. And my friend, this movie is so fucking bad. There are multiple, and I'm not kidding, there are multiple scenes in this movie where all the campers will be together, like around the fire or whatever, and then the killer will show up, the real killer, and he'll start just hacking the shit out of campers, slitting throats, stabbing them in the chest, and anyone who's not getting stabbed or attacked, they're all sitting there applauding, saying, wow, it looks so real, woo, that looks so cool. Motherfuckers, blood has a smell. How do you not know what blood smells like? I mean, and like I said, multiple scenes of this where the killer just shows up and kills like a third of the people around the campfire and then just walks away. And then no one notices that the people are dead and that they don't come back. Like, at no point in the movie are people like, hey, what happened to this guy? Hey, what happened to this dude? Like, they disappear and everyone just assumes that it's a part of the entertainment, that it's a part of the camp experience. Which just, oh God, it just pissed me off so bad. Then when you get the backstory of the killer, oh my God, fuck off. Aw, somebody made fun of you when you were a little kid. Yeah, that's a perfect reason to go ahead and murder about 30 fucking people. Because I was made fun of when I was little. Aw, fuck you. Yeah, my friends, Camp Pleasant Lake is an absolute avoid. It is my worst movie of the year for 2024. I struggled to even give it a 3 out of 10. I struggled to give it a 3 out of 10. I wanted to give it a 2. But there are a couple of decent kills in the movie, including the last kill of the movie, which is actually the most brutal kill in the film, like the most realistic, uncomfortable, painful kill in the movie. But it's at the very end, and by the time, you know, you've already kind of disassociated yourself with this movie by the time you get to the end. Once again, 90 minutes, so it's not a long watch, but I would strongly recommend that you skip this. Even if you're a fan of slashers, I would strongly recommend you skip this one. But again, just like me, where I'll watch any bad found footage movie, I'm sure there's slasher fans out there that'll watch any bad slasher. So check it out if that sounds like something you're into. It's just your basic summer camp slasher movie. Nothing too special other than the backstory of the killer. I hope neither of you guys have seen this, because you're never getting that hour and a half back.
No, and I didn't even know this was a thing until, but now I'm kind of curious on
it. Like I said, when I saw the cast, I see Jonathan Lipnicki, Bonnie Ahrens, and Michael Parr. I'm like, well, they're especially Bonnie Ahrens. I love Bonnie Ahrens. Like, aside from her, the stuff that she's done in The Conjuring and stuff like that, she did an Alien movie a couple of years ago that was actually really, really cool. It was only an hour-long movie. I totally forget the name of the movie.
Mulholland Drive.
No, oh God, stop that.
Mulholland Drive. She's awesome.
she's a witch. I know. Trust me. First time we saw Bonnie Aaron. But, no, I forget the name of the Alien movie. I probably should have looked it up, but I didn't realize that I was going to be talking about this particular movie today. So, like I said, if you're incredibly forgiving of bad killers, bad characters, just bad movies in general, then I'd say go ahead and give Camp Pleasant Lake a shot. Otherwise, there's just not really here. There's not much here for, you know, us hardcore fans. So, yeah, leave it alone. Next.
So not the barn too, that's for sure.
I was going to say, I'm glad you got to it before me, because there were a couple times that I scrolled by thinking, if at least it's a slasher, maybe there'll be some good kills and some fun out of it. And then I heard you make a comment about it. I was like, oh, thank God, I wasn't the guinea pig on this one.
Well, Don, our other co-host, saw it first. And he actually reviewed it for his website. I read the review, saw how much Don hated it, and I still decided to give it a shot like an idiot.
Well, you gave it 8 out of 10 still, though?
No. He hated it. He gave it a really bad review.
Oh, okay.
No. He didn't like it at all. No. For once, Don is part of the majority.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, even though he gave it a bad review, I still decided to give it a shot. And yeah, that was a mistake. Hour and a half of my life I'll never get back. Oh well. I could have been watching Transformers or something. What the fuck?
Yeah, Mirage. Hell yeah.
All right. Next.
What do you got, Derek?
Okay. What I got next is, let me look at my stack. I'm going to talk about hair extensions.
Woo!
I watched that. Oh, man. That was last show. My bad. I did do that last show. Holy shit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to talk about the 4K of a movie that me and Mr. Venom did, known as Species, from Scream Factory. Yeah, I'm going to talk. There's actually a lot of cool, like, special features on that, actually. Like, there's an interview with Natasha Henstridge. It was kind of revealing of, like, her experiences on those movies, which I think would actually have been good for your research, Venom, because you were actually asked the question.
Oh, about her career, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it was very informative. It was actually a very good interview, brand new for the release. Mm-hmm. And talks about Species 2, too, which I'm weird. I actually prefer Species 2 over Species 1. It's a little bit more, like, it finds its balance in that franchise of what you want to be, and it goes that weird route.
Nice.
You know, which I actually talked about in the episode when we reviewed it. Listen to that. But then, fucking, it's just weird. But, yeah, it has, like, Ronald Donaldson, like, has, like, a commentary with Michael Madsen. I'm like, damn, Madsen came for the commentary? He didn't seem like he wanted to be there in the movie.
Exactly.
I was like, I have to listen to that later. Yeah, I was just standing around in this scene. I was thinking, what's for lunch? You know? Like, that would be fucking funny if he actually said that in the commentary. Which I mean,
that's what it looks like. Him and Ben Kingsley, man. It looks like they're just there collecting a check.
Yeah. Definitely, like I said, like even like the 4K transfer didn't fucking do the CGI well for that period. But, yeah, if you still like 4Ks, I would recommend it. If you are a fan of Species, which, you know, I'm a weirdo. I'm not saying it's a great movie, but, you know, it's one that I go back to once in a while. And, like, even when it's on, like, oh, this was a thing.
Yeah.
You know? But if you're a fan, you're, like I said, there's a lot of good information on it, on that disc. So that's good, because even like the old Scream Factory Blu-ray was out of print for a while. So it's glad that they put it back out on a new edition with those features that I want. Because I never picked up that Blu-ray before. So that was good at least. But yeah, not my favorite, like I said. And then, you know, that Dog Soldiers 4K? That was a fucking crown jewel that they put out. Watch that double feature. That's actually probably one of the reasons I fucking picked fucking Species. Because I watched both those 4Ks back to back.
Funny backstory, though. We wanted to do a female centric creature feature for March for Creature Comforts, and we had a list of, you know, some female monster movies. And we ended up going with Species, and Species is probably the least empowering women movie that we could have picked. Like, of all the different, like, She-Beast and the Wasp Woman and the Leech Woman and all the different female-centric creature features that we could have picked, we picked the one that had the least empowering. Because, my friends, I said it on the show, and I'll say it again, Syl is not an empowering character. If she can't fuck you, she kills you. She's just a predator. There's nothing empowering about that. So it's kind of funny. I hadn't seen the movie since I saw it in theaters. So when it was picked, I just went ahead and agreed with it. No big deal. But yeah, as I'm watching it, I'm like, wow, this is like the opposite of a female empowerment movie. But
yeah, it was a more fun one to talk about, though. You know what I mean?
It's always fun to talk.
The Wasp Woman's only like an hour long movie, and it's like there's not really much. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, she became a wasp, but then she died. You know, it's like it's like Randall talking about Lord of the Rings and Clerks too.
Oh, valid. No, absolutely.
This is part one when he just walks, and then part two when he slightly trips.
Oh God, I love that franchise. Yeah, Mike is wrong.
Yeah, fuck you, Mike.
Yeah, sorry, Mike, you're wrong. Oh, my God. No one knows what the fuck we're talking about, and I'm not going to explain it to anybody. So, yeah, just accept the fact that Mike is wrong.
Mike is wrong. Greatest trilogy ever.
Well, I won't go that far.
It's one of the best great trilogies ever.
Honestly, as a fan, and I know we're going off on a tangent, on a non-horror tangent again, but I got to say it. I think the third Clerks movie was absolute perfection. It's absolute fan service for anyone who's been with the Clerks franchise since the beginning, and not just Clerks, but all the Kevin Smith movies, because there are references in Clerks 3 from like Chasing Amy and stuff like that too. Oh. So it's literally, I mean, I said it in my review, it's a love letter to Kevin Smith fans. Now, if you're not a hardcore Kevin Smith fan, and that's fine. You're not going to see it. You're not going to see. I mean, I literally had stars in my eyes watching that entire movie. And I actually saw it with Kevin Smith. He did a Q&A out here in L.A., and my wife and I went to go see it, and because my wife is also a gigantic Kevin Smith fan. And we absolutely loved it. And this was 2 days before Kevin Conroy died, too. So Kevin Smith, you know, he knew that Kevin Conroy's health was failing. So he was a little depressed during the Q&A, and someone asked him about his mood, and he literally goes off on a half-hour tangent about why Kevin Conroy is the best Batman ever. So it was a great night all around. But, yeah, Clerks 3 is perfection to me. I fucking loved it. I can watch it daily.
It's fucking crazy because, you know, the way I said that is because I watched – one, and then I watched two the same day, so I'm like, fuck, I gotta watch. I haven't seen part three yet, because I kind of stayed away from it for a while, because there's a lot of...
It was a weird release, too, because it never came out in theaters, and then it didn't really get an official release. Like, Kevin Smith, like, toured with it. He did, like, different stops at major cities where he would screen the movie and then do a Q&A, which is what I saw. But yeah, it had no official release, and then the physical release literally just came out not too long ago.
Yeah.
It was a weird release for Clerks 3. I wouldn't be surprised if he funded it himself. Like, maybe that's why a lot of people didn't even know it existed for a while. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to horror.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
First two Clerks. Very good. Third one is all right. Tim.
Ike is wrong.
Shit. Do I have another horror movie I watched? I watched like a lot of bad ones. Zone of Interest. I mean, technically, it's a very specific type of horror, but I don't know.
Yeah, I watched the movie. It's horror. Yeah.
Vampire Next Door was pretty mediocre. About a vampire movie next door making deals with a kid. I don't even want to fucking talk about that. That shit was too awful.
It was just okay.
Oh, yeah. You saw it too? Okay.
Yeah.
That's why I just talked about, because I've seen a lot of shitty movies that I hate talking about shit. I don't even like to give fucking eyes to those movies.
I wish there was a horror element in Love Lies Bleeding, because I saw that and that was really good.
You gave that shitty new movie that you shitted on. I still want to watch it kind of after your review.
I equate Love Lies Bleeding to like a GTA side mission. Like, you're driving around, hit like the desert and you run into like some random people that send you on some weird ass side like revenge side quest. That's what Love Lies Blue Beam felt like. But A24 always yeah. putting the good ones out.
At the end of Love Lies Bleeding, I felt the same way that I felt after I watched Titane the first time. Like I'm scratching my head like, okay, most of the movie is grounded in reality, but then they'll do something so completely detached from reality that you're like, what the fuck? Like,
that movie's Titane, a trip.
Titane was more grounded in reality than, well.
I don't know.
She was fucking cars and shit.
I know what you're talking about. Like that last kind of sequence, I'm assuming it's
metaphorical.
Supposed
I
to be
understand.
Like the euphoric, yeah, kind of like the euphoric POV of the characters, and like, oh yeah, we did it, we succeeded, and we feel bigger than, you know.
Right. They're bigger than life. No, I understand the metaphor. I just was like, what the fuck? Like, literally, the entire movie is grounded in reality. It's a gritty, gun-fu action movie, and it just then the end is like, what the fuck am I looking at? Hey, like I said, it took me a few minutes. I understood that it was metaphorical, and I understand what the metaphor meant, so I don't hate the scene necessarily. But like I said, at the end of Love Lies Bleeding, I felt the same way I felt after Titane, which is not a bad thing, mind you. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Both movies are great in their own right. There is a spectacular kill in Love Lies Bleeding, though. It's just one of the best kills of the year, actually, and it's in a non-horror movie. I couldn't get over it. Mike knows what I'm talking about.
Loved Ed Harris in it, too.
Oh, dude, Ed Harris, what do you call it, the Franco brother that was in it? He was great. Yeah, like the whole cast did really well. I was especially...
What movie
was that? Love Lies Bleeding. It's in theaters now. It just came out.
Oh, okay.
The main chick. Yeah, Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart's Kristen Stewart in every movie. I mean, I don't dislike her, but, you know, it's not like I find her exceptional. It's
fucking
Jackie.
Bella.
Jackie in that movie. Her performance was fucking stellar. I would not be surprised if she gets a supporting actress nomination. That performance was really cool. Just the arc... You know, everything that happened to her after she started doing the steroids, just all the bodybuilding stuff in that movie was fucking great. I actually, like, I'm not into bodybuilding at all. I've never watched a bodybuilding competition in my life, but everything in the movie surrounding bodybuilding, I fucking loved.
Yeah.
Man, a lot of lesbian sex, though. God damn, a lot of lesbian sex.
Yeah. Jenna Malone was in it. Poor Jenna Malone in that movie.
Poor Jenna Malone. Oh, my God. I want to say poor Jenna Malone, but she's a fucking idiot.
True. Very much so.
Oh, I want to see this movie now. This looks cool.
Oh, no, check it out, dude. It's a fun – I mean, it's still A24, so you know it's going to be well-directed, well-edited. It's going to have a good score. It's going to have great performances. Ed Harris, like Mike said, Ed Harris is fucking spectacular in it. Dave Franco is cool. I don't know the actress.
I like Dave Franco.
And it's a very non-Dave Franco role that he's in, too, which is kind of cool.
I like him better than fucking James.
I think we've all just gotten over James, you know? His time kind of came and went.
Yeah, he sucks now. Fuck him.
I wouldn't say sucks. I haven't seen anything with him that I like lately. Not since, The Disaster Artist. That was probably the last thing of his that I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even that trailer trashy blonde girl in it did pretty well.
Remember the character's name. Oh, Daisy was great. Yeah, Daisy was awesome with her fucked up teeth. Yeah. Those were the brownest teeth I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, that girl's been, she's been smoking since she was two.
I guess to make up for it, she had a nice everything else. But yeah, those teeth were freaking.
She was adorable. I mean, she's totally adorable. Just somebody buy that girl a toothbrush. I'm sure that those weren't the actress's actual teeth. I'm just
for sure.
I knew they were. That'd be amazing.
Oh, that'd be embarrassing. But no, yeah, fucking get some dental work.
Well, if they were, they won't be in her next role because she probably got a paycheck
I'm looking up a lot of pictures of her. She's not smiling. So I'm telling you something.
Oh, man. I think we talked about Love Lies Bleeding. I think we covered it.
Yeah.
Good review, guys.
Consider that my
I mean, for a non-horror movie, I think a lot of horror fans are going to dig it. Like I said, there's some good gunplay, one really cool kill, and the story is just awesome. It's just a really great story. So, yeah.
Yeah, because you could call it like a revenge exploitation movie, which is sort of like a cousin to
Absolutely.
Horror in a way.
Yeah. No, definitely. So. I mean, it's very close to Rape Revenge. It's just there's no rape. Thank God.
Oh, boy.
Okay, cool. Well, that's going to wrap up the what we watched. As far as news items go, there was an article. Well, we'll get to that. Joe Bob had an article he wrote about he doesn't see himself retiring, which I love it. I love to hear it. I just think he has too much fun doing it. Because, like, I think something that separates Joe Bob from a lot of other, like, I guess, characters is he's genuine and he's doing it because he loves films. And I'm not saying he's the only one. There's lots of people that just love films, obviously. But I just think he'll keep doing it until, like, Shudder says, we're not paying you anymore to do it, you know? It's probably not a hard thing for him to do because he's talking about movies and he gets
in a chair, you know.
In a chair, yeah. He's screening movies and once in a while he goes to events to do it live. And I'm just glad that he's still around and the second season is kicking off. They just had that Roger Corman special last week, and then next week starts that new format where they're going to go every other week and one movie instead of two, and then but. Darcy's been alluding to them doing another 24-hour marathon, so be looking forward to that shit, because I think the last time they did that was when the fucking 22 Shots did the 24-hour stream.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah, I remember. I was there asleep for some of it. I remember that. I remember because I woke up and it was still going, and I was like, oh, shit.
Dude, legitimately, the stream was just Mike's fucking, the thumbnail was just his head.
Yeah. That shit, oh man, that'll live in infamy. Alright, the next thing, I've heard this on social media, and I was going to ask if either of you can confirm or deny, is it true that Tubi's cutting movies? Because, like, I want to say that I don't think they're editing movies. I just think there might be certain movies that they just license, like maybe the R version instead of unrated. I don't consider that editing. It's just they just
It's not like the unrated version. Yeah,
they're just airing the theatrical cut or the R-rated cut. Yeah, that's not an editing.
Yeah, because any movie I've watched on there that I have enough of a memory of to know, I haven't seen anything edited out.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't really watch old shit on Tubi. Tubi for me is just new stuff. Anything old I want to see, I either own or I can watch it, you know, on somebody's Plex or whatever.
Yeah, the only thing I usually watch on there sometimes that's old is like fucking, because they have like the whole section of found footage. I just throw one of those to go to sleep to.
Tubi's a great app for when you're working and you just, so I finally just made like a playlist because I was like, man, I'm wasting too much time when I constantly open Tubi and just start browsing to find something. I was like, I need to start making a list. So I made like a playlist of like 50 movies, and it's a really good option for when you're working and you just need to have something going on in the background. It's great for that. And they do a good job of like playing the next movie that's like related to what you were watching.
Nice. Usually when I go to Tubi, I just do a search for 2024 horror, and everything that comes up won't be brand new, but a lot of it will. So, like I said, since I only watch new stuff on Tubi, I just do that same search every time I go there, and I pick whatever looks mildly interesting.
Titanic 666. Let's do
this. Hey, we reviewed that, man.
Yeah, we did.
I was gonna check out that one that Andrew Pash and Dread Central, or OG Dread Central fame. He posted on his friend has a new movie on Tubi called You Shouldn't Have Let Them In or Him In or something like that. I just haven't got around to it yet, but I know that's a new one. All right, so yeah, I didn't see anyone posting like actual examples of the Tubi thing. I just think it's one of those things where it gets posted, then reposted, and it catches fire, and everyone's repeating it before they actually have looked into it properly.
Yeah, that's, you know? If no one has examples, then it's not a thing. Because if you remember when Disney Plus first started the app, when the app was first introduced, there was that controversy with the Simpsons, the old Simpsons episodes, where they were cropping them, making them HD. Yeah. And then you were actually, and then people would post examples. They'd have like the cropped image from Disney Plus, and then the image how it appeared on Fox when it first aired. And literally, Disney Plus was cutting out jokes. Like there were actual jokes on the screen, like punchlines that they were cutting out. So yeah. So if people are claiming that Tubi is editing movies, but no one has any examples, then it's not a thing. It's just a hot take. Don't worry about it. Yeah, trust me, like, the internet sleuths would have found the examples on the first day, I assure you.
it's like you're not going to watch the fucking unrated version of The Descent on fucking HBO Max. It's going to be the fucking theatrical cut.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep. All right. So I guess get to the big one is Nev Campbell's returning to Scream. Are we all super excited about that?
Can you see the excitement in my face? Can you see it? Look, there it is. Look.
No, I mean,
I couldn't care less, literally.
I wish he was back in the more Twisted Metal, to be honest, but that's just me.
Don't you think the issue here is, like, it just feels like, under the circumstances, it's just a desperation move because they lost their two biggest stars. The core four is now the core two, and that's if they even return, because we have no idea what the plot even is.
Yeah.
So the problem for me is, like, it's
gotta be big.
It's not that she's returning. It's not like it's an issue that she's returning, but I feel like the longer the franchise goes, the sillier the justifications for her character to, like, even be involved become.
At least we won't get any more ghosts of Billy Loomis.
Well, especially now that Dewey was killed off, you would think, like, okay, there's no way in hell she's coming back around. And honestly, the same thing fucking goes for Gail Weathers. Like, I feel like Gail Weathers, she would never be in any danger because, like, the killers usually don't give a fuck about her, but she decides to, like, show back up to cover the story.
Yeah.
But, like at least Sydney, there's usually, like, you can justify, okay, there's a connection. But Gail, it's like, you know, if you just don't go back to the town, you're never going to be in danger. Like, the killers aren't chasing you down, Gail Weathers. Like, they don't care.
How they fucking Dr. Loomis, that one character from Scream 4 for the sixth one, was fucking hilarious. She was totally like fucking Dr. Loomis in that movie.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
And wasn't Kevin Williamson's return also announced?
He's the director. Time he's directing, which it's a first Scream movie he's directing, I think.
He wrote the original first one he's directing now.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean,
I care more about that than Nev Campbell. 100% God's honest truth. I way care more about Williamson coming back because it's the creative people behind a horror movie, the people behind the camera that make it great. I'm not saying that the people in front of the camera don't make a difference. Of course they do. But at its core, if the people behind the camera know what the fuck they're doing and they care about the franchise, that's more exciting to me than a legacy character coming back.
Yeah.
Especially a legacy character I don't really care about. Like I said, it's not my franchise. You know, I've never really been all that warm on Scream, so... So apologies to all you 90s kids, but I'm an 80s kid. So, yeah, Scream does nothing for me.
Well,
get off my lawn.
Would you say out of every slasher franchise in existence, Scream is the only one where the very first scene of the very first movie is the best scene in the entire franchise, and it hasn't lived up to the – nothing has – I don't dislike the Scream – some of them I don't dislike. Some of them I just find are okay, but I don't think there's been anything greater in the Scream in the entire franchise than the opening scene of the first movie. That's just my honest opinion.
Hell, the first movie had the Fonz in it. Hey.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, it literally established who Ghostface was. Not his identity, but the kind of killer that he was and how he likes to fuck with his victims. I mean, that opening scene is spectacular.
And it set up the one true time it felt like you didn't know who was going to live or die, because Drew Barrymore was promoted as, like, the star of the movie going into it. And that's – and honestly – so I have this next thing to say, which you guys can comment on too, because Dread Central is doing like a final girl competition, and I've always had a problem. I know Sydney Prescott is technically a final girl because of the way it's written, but I've always had an issue with her being thrown in with the rest because there's zero expectation she's ever going to die to me. Once you become untouchable in a franchise, it's like, where's the mystique? Where's the intrigue? Like, every other franchise, you might have a character return for a movie, and then they get taken out. But, like, I just feel like going into every movie, Sydney is just a character that gets everyone around her killed, and she survives.
She's Charles Bronson. She's Charles fucking Bronson in Death Wish franchise.
Oh, my God. She's a bad luck charm.
Yeah,
good. I like
it's chicken. Like I just always feel like she's never. I mean, technically she's in danger because of the way the story weaves it in and out around her. But I just I think ever since the first one,
most
I've never gone to a
scary
movie thinking
that,
she
lady.
Was ever gonna die. Like, it's just, there's zero expectation, and so it's hard for me to put her in that same category.
Like she even like lady had like crazy fucking obsessed siblings and cousins and shit too. It's fucking crazy fucking franchise.
Yeah, you would think okay, this is gonna be the seventh one. Seven movies in, you would think eventually if there's a killer out there that still wants her dead for whatever reason,
soon she finds
they're
out
done
she
making a production
brother,
out of it. They're just like, I'm just going to find her and go walk up to her. Like, if you want her dead that bad by 20 years later, they would have learned the lessons of every previous Ghostface and be like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't make a big old drawn-out thing about this and just murder her.
So just turn into the Fast and Furious franchise where they're going to bring back Dewey and he faked his death.
Oh, God. Stop it. Oh, man.
I know, like, Moods was – I was listening to 22 Shots, and he was suggesting making her the killer. And I was like, to me, the only way you can do that is if it's the final movie of hers, because I don't think you can go back from that. That's the problem.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, absolutely. I would be okay with that. I'd be very okay with
like, I would actually be okay with it if she was putting her foot down to say, this is the last Scream movie I'm doing. Then it would work, because then you could justify whatever twist and turn you need to make it happen. You do it, and then that could also be the circumstance that she finally gets taken out, right? Is because she's a killer in it. But like, to me, you can't make her the killer, and then like the very next movie, it's like, okay, back to good Sydney.
Somehow Sydney returned.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The good Sydney.
The rise of the Sydney Skywalker is about to happen.
Terrible.
I think it's funny because Scream's that franchise that, like, they've made attempts to move on from legacy and they just can't quite do it. Kind of like Halloween and Laurie Strode. Like, they try to do it and they just keep bringing back Laurie Strode. So we'll see what happens when... Because I think Jamie Lee Curtis said there ain't going to be no more of her in Halloween movies, so...
No,
we'll
she's done.
See.
She's an Oscar winner now. She's like, fuck that.
Hell yeah. Who needs to do horror? I got an Oscar. Fuck yeah.
Yep. And the only other thing I had, it's not even a news, but I just had a question. Like, it kind of has to do with like the eras and the new generation of horror fans. Do you think we're kind of getting back to a place where, like... classic horror is like surprising people again? And the reason I'm asking is because I see a lot more posts now than say 10, 15 years ago where young folks are watching like older horror movies, like let's say Psycho or The Thing or Alien. And they're reacting as if like they're being surprised by them again versus 10, 15 years ago, it seemed like a lot of these classic movies, like, for example, when I was growing up, I had not seen Psycho as a kid, but I knew Norman Bates, the character. I knew Mother, because it was such, like, in pop culture zeitgeist to, like, to just use Norman Bates as, like, a line in a phrase you say. But once that stuff exits pop culture, it's almost like you have to go back to actually seeing the movies to even understand it. So I think it's kind of cool that, like, we've kind of come full circle where now people are watching these old movies without having, like, everything about it known and, like, spoken about first. So I think that's pretty cool. And people aren't necessarily looking up to spoil themselves either, which is good. Good job. Good job, youth.
Well, that's something definitely that you've noticed, because I definitely have not. Pretty much as long as social media has existed, I've seen people talking about, oh, I just watched Dawn of the Dead for the first time. Wow, you know, that was so cool. Or I just watched The Shining for the first time. Like, I personally haven't noticed an uptick of people talking about classic movies. They always do. I mean, at least I've always seen it. I can almost never go more than a day without seeing somebody post, oh, I just watched The Birds for the first time or something. So I don't know. I mean, if you're noticing it, then I'm not going to deny it's a thing. But I, pretty much my entire time on social media, which goes all the way back to the mid-90s when fucking the infancy of the internet, I've always seen a fairly steady flow of people, you know, liking and watching older things, because there's a lot of new fans too. Like, and then whenever there's a new podcast and they have a new Facebook page, I'll join that Facebook page and you'll see like younger fans going, oh, I just watched The Shining, man, that was so great. Or, you know, I just watched American Werewolf, blah, 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 you know. So, like I said, I'm not trying to be the voice of dissent here. I'm just saying I haven't noticed that. That's just me.
Yeah,
but if it is happening, that's awesome. No, I agree with you. If it is,
I love when that
uptick, then rock on. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what post always gets me is like when I see somebody watch like a movie that I fucking love for the first time and they love it too in the comments. Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, like fucking Knight Riders. I'm like, yeah.
Ah, Knight Riders is awesome.
So yeah, I'm telling you, I want to see posts. There's people watching Knight Riders for the first time on the No More Room Hell.
I was shocked too last night when I went to go see Late Night with the Devil. There was like a lot of young folks, and I had to like realize too. It's like, okay, there's going to be a difference because like I tend to watch a lot of first thing in the morning showings on the weekend. So that I was there on a Thursday night, I was like, oh yeah, it should be busier. But the demographics of the crowd were like all over the place, which was cool. Like I expect that type of crowd for Immaculate because that's like getting the big commercial push, like, you know, with Sydney Sweeney and all that. But the fact that there's a lot of people there to see Late Night with the Devil, I was glad to see it because I feel like ever since Terrifier 2, that these kind of smaller horror movies, they're not getting these huge theatrical runs, but it's like they're being given a chance. Like, they might be, like, for a week or two, or it might be like, oh, it's only going to get two showings a night. But they're starting to be given, like, a little chance even in the multiplex and even in the smaller cities. So that's cool.
I live in L.A., so it's always been like that here. I can't really speak on smaller cities.
Yeah, you probably don't know any different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything plays here. Like, if a movie exists, it's playing in L.A. I just
got to find it. Yep. Lucky bastard.
No, you know, like, even, like, when I went to go see, like, Godzilla Minus One, it was cool seeing, like, younger demographics in that. For, like, a subtitled fucking movie, it was, you know, interesting in that. Sense like, what the fuck?
Horror, I feel like horror has always attracted the younger generation. Like, like older cinephiles don't usually gravitate towards horror, unless they've been watching horror their whole lives, maybe. But I mean, like, ask the average 50-year-old down the street if they watch horror movies, 99 out of 100 times they're going to say no. But yeah, if you ask
how, like, their favorite actor, and they might go see it or something.
Yeah, the Polka Dot Man's Late Night of the Devil. He's got a big crowd.
Polka Dot Man.
Well, I know he's in a lot of movies. That guy, he's good.
Yeah, last Voyage of the Demeter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most recently, I think for him, for Dave Dashmelian. I think.
Yeah, and he also played Lester Billions in The Boogeyman. You know.
Yeah. Oh God, I'll forgive him for that.
No, he was the best part of that movie though, because
there was no best part.
Yeah. I disagree.
I hated that movie. God damn it. I love the short. I hate the movie. Oh well.
Yep. Well, that's all I got. Do you guys have any news or horror stuff to bring up?
Nah, I'm looking through my notes too, and they're all like a month old at this point. So yeah, you went over all the newest stuff. So
yeah, I have so much stuff on my show notes like crossed out because I'm like, yeah, too old.
Yeah.
We're gonna kill a clown's 4K. That's pretty sweet.
I'm on that.
I was borderline almost gonna not even bring up the Nev Campbell thing because when I originally wrote it down, it was like
it was a joke, you know. It was like, that's such an art.
Yeah. All right. If that's all we got, then we're gonna take our break and we're gonna be back with a William Castle double features. We're gonna be covering Homicidal and Straitjacket. So
Homicidal.
Yeah, so we will be right back.
Homicidal. Lots of gay guys.
Nightmare on Elm Street of the 50s.
Ah!
Part 2.
For the first time in screen history, a special interval will be provided during the running of this picture for refunding your admission. If you're unable to stand the almost unbearable suspense, the almost paralyzing shock of Homicidal.
When I put those clothes on, something happens to me. Something frightening. No! 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 God, no!
From the loneliness and simplicity of an isolated farm to the sophisticated elegance of a country estate, Straitjacket mounts to a crescendo of electrifying suspense. Sinister. Frightening.
Bill! Don't you go in that room!
Joan Crawford in a shattering screen portrayal. A frantic woman pressured by straitjacket tension.
Leave me alone! You let go of me! Listen to me!
Just call me Lucy. I wouldn't like my little girl to think I was trying to take her fellow away from her.
Carol and Michael are going to be married! And nobody's gonna stop it!
Ingeniously designed to shock and startle, Straitjacket may go beyond the limits of your ability to endure suspense.
Mother!
He's gone.
Oh, my God!
The author of the famed novel Psycho, the director of the widely acclaimed thriller Homicidal, the co-star of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, join forces to create a frightening classic of shock and suspense.
Yum, yum. It's time for a tasty and refreshing snack. promise to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, your sweet tooth. So visit our refreshment center now. Let's go! And now, on with the show.
All right, we are back with our movies, and let me just say up front, no, they're not Psycho and Psycho 2, but I can see the similarities and kind of like the parallel themes. Now, it's funny because Psycho came out, I think, a year, I think Homicidal 61 and Psycho 60, yeah. But Straight Jacket was way before Psycho 2, so we can compare and contrast. Obviously, it's not going to be
that's fucking kind of weird, yeah, actually, yeah. On that watch.
So, Homicidal, 19. Well, I guess first I can say a little piece on William Castle. When I first became familiar with him, he's kind of described to me as like the B movie version of Hitchcock, because he plays with like a lot of kind of like the same psychological twists in his movies. His characters are, you know, they can tend to be less fleshed out. He usually gets done in like 80 to 90 minutes, what like a Hitchcock movie would typically be two and a half hours. So he's kind of like, like a B movie version of a Hitchcock. Most of the stuff I've seen from William Castle is highly entertaining. It's very fun, easy, watchable, digestible movies. And he's also known for like different gimmicks. I know that movie Matinee with John Goodman.
I love that movie.
I think some of it was loosely based, like the character was loosely based on some aspects of William Castle. Like if you look it up, it's by no means like a biography drama of William Castle or anything. But obviously when they were crafting that character that John Goodman plays, yeah. I think they definitely threw in some elements of the style of William Castle. That's a great movie, by the way, Matinee. Not a horror movie, but just it's all around fun ass movie.
Yeah,
another John Goodman performance.
Well, one of my favorite Joe Dante movies, to be honest. I love it.
Hell yeah, damn! Just like even referencing it makes. I haven't seen it in so long, and
John Goodman's so fucking good in it too. It's so good.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was young enough to not really know. Like, obviously, I knew, like, oh, they're covering this certain time period, but I didn't know much about that time period because I was so young.
And as a kid from Hocus Pocus,
made me interested to watch, like, monster movies, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Amari Katz.
Oh, yeah. All right, so 1961, Homicidal, hour and 28 minutes, unrated. Although unrated back then doesn't exactly mean the same thing as unrated now, but anyways, the brutal stabby murder of a justice of the peace sparks an investigation of dark family secrets in a sleepy small town in Southern California. See, even like the even the synopsis sounds like it could be a Hitchcock movie, but definitely not my first watch. Like we said at the beginning of the show, I actually covered these on 22 Shots. I don't think I've watched either one since then, though, so it was kind of cool after a few years revisiting them. You know, I actually made some comments then that I would even echo now. I think there's a similar twist in this to Psycho. However, I think this one is almost guarded a little better to me than the one in Psycho, only because when I was growing up, I knew so much about Psycho before I ever watched it that, like, I felt like from the beginning I had, like, a good beat on what was going on, where in this one, obviously on the repeat viewings, it's hard to miss. Like, obviously, once you've seen the movie once, you can see things, you pick up on things from earlier in the movie. But I remember the first time I watched this, I was more surprised at this twist than I even was with Psycho's. But I'm going to keep my thoughts brief.
I want to hear what you guys have to say. That was really a she.
Yeah. So I'll start with Venom. Is this your first time seeing it? What did you think of Homicidal?
Yes, this is my first time watch, and I am going to 100% disagree with you, because I called the end of the movie the instant Warren appears on screen the first time. I'm going to try to be as ambiguous as possible. I don't know how spoilery we want to get, but literally the first time Warren is on screen, I'm looking at him, and you can ask my wife, because we both watched it together, and I literally said out loud, "That's not a man." I literally said it out loud. That's not a man. Guys don't talk like that. Guys don't walk like that. Even the way he walked, didn't make sense. And his voice, his mouth, the way that he kept his lips tight, I'm like, there's something not right here. Like, that's not a guy. I thought it was going to turn out to be a female actress playing a male character and that it wouldn't actually have any bearing on the story, but I was wrong. So having said that, though, I'm not going to necessarily take away anything from this movie. Because obviously, if I saw this in 1961, I don't know that I would have been, you know, as savvy a horror movie viewer. But yeah, I called the twist instantly, like before we even got to the mystery of it all. As soon as we meet Warren, I said it instantly. And it's like, and that's not a detriment to the actress, because obviously, you know, she's playing two different characters and, you know, she did do a good job. I'm not saying that she necessarily did a good job, didn't do a good job. What I'm saying
is, I really agree with the mouth. The yeah, mouth was the most.
I'm
it just
like,
looked awkward and weird and unnatural.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I just don't under. Like, I've seen prim and proper Englishmen whose asshole isn't that tight. Like, just the way he was walking, he literally.
Oh, the one who played him as a little kid was fucking terrifying.
Oh, valid. No, definitely, absolutely, but just. I literally, at one point, I put in my notes, he walks like he just took a huge shit. like he's keeping his butt tight because it hurts.
She found Captain Winky.
Yeah, it's just like, oh my God. Now, again, this is a 1961 film, so it's going to be easy for us to laugh at it. But in 1961, I'm sure this was a fairly entertaining film with a twist that most people didn't see coming, which is cool. I love the very first kill scene in the movie. It's fucking brutal. Like, she just out of nowhere, he snaps and just starts stabbing this guy like mad.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, wow, for 61, this was great. This was like a brutal on-screen kill. So I will absolutely give credit to the movie for that. I'm not a big fan of the William Castle intro. It's a little hokey. Now, I understand that William Castle is in his own right hokey. And that's fine, because growing up, most of the people around me who knew who William Castle was didn't even really look at him as a filmmaker. They looked at him as a showman, because he used to always say he wanted his movies to be an experience, that, you know, you don't just sit in the theater and watch one of my movies. Like, there's, you know, like the Emergo stuff that he did with The Tingler and The House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
We get the suspense break in this one, which, I know what he was going for, but.
Yeah, it's kind of like the scene from, like, the werewolf whodunit movie.
Yeah, big time. So. Yeah, so not a bad movie. Good performances. Like I said, maybe if they remade this movie, they could probably do a better job of hiding the actor playing Warren. You know, I mean, you know, we've seen females play a male and a female character in the same movie. You know, most recently, what's her face in the Suspiria remake? Who?
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, I don't like that movie, but her performance was fine. Like, even her male performance, I thought, was actually halfway decent.
Oh, when she played Jabba the Hutt at the end of that movie? That was amazing. Ooshaw Wookie.
So, yeah, so for the most part, I do enjoy this movie. I can see how it definitely elevated William Castle's star. Because, like I said, good suspense, good mystery. It's just that when you're a savvy horror fan in 2024, watching it now for the first time, it kind of tips its hat a little early. That's all. But, again, not going to take anything away from it. Good time. Good ending. Even though I saw it coming, I still enjoyed it. I liked the reveal, the whole reveal of it. I wish there were more brutal kills in it, like the second movie that we're going to talk about. One other thing that really, really escapes me is Warren's motivation. Like, I don't understand his motivation in this movie. Like, there's so much about it I don't understand. Like, he would have still inherited all the money without doing all the stupid shit that he did. Like, it didn't really. I understand, because this movie has elements of Sleepaway Camp in it too, where
that's what I exactly thought.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, where a boy is basically forced to be to act like a girl, you know, for so long that they basically just become a woman without even.
It's the reverse.
This one is different because Warren is playing both all the time. You know, Warren will be Warren at one point, and then he'll be the other character at another point.
Emily.
Yeah, so, again, not a terrible movie. Probably the lesser of the two for me, of the two that we're going to talk about today. Like I said, the hokiness of William Castle, like the intro and then the fright break right before the big reveal, it just comes off as just novelty. And that's exactly what it is. It is novelty, and I understand that. But sometimes, like, the fright break actually took me out of it. I don't know if it did that to any of you guys, but, like, as the last two people in the movie are nearing the barn, like, the suspense is building, and I'm like, yeah, yeah, let's do it. And then suddenly it stops, and they're like, oh, fright break.
Like, yeah, it just seems out of, like, it's super hokey.
Yeah.
It feels like that's something that could work with, like, a packed crowd at a movie theater, but when you're watching it at home,
yeah,
it's more like we don't need to.
Yeah,
we want to just get to it.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like when you're watching the gimmick part of The Tingler, it's like it doesn't work the same because you're not getting electrocuted in your seat.
Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely an experience, just like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's something that you need to experience live. Sitting in your living room and watching it does not convey the experience of seeing it live. So,
I love watching 13 Ghosts with the 3D glasses, though.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Blu-ray, that was fucking awesome.
That was great. And when I went to see it, they actually played the 13 Ghosts special feature after it. You know, the one where it explains all 13 ghosts. It was like a special presentation where they had like special features playing afterwards. And
yo, I love the original 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, the original's great.
Margaret Hamilton. Yeah,
exactly. but yeah, so you know, Homicidal, solid film. Maybe not something that I would call essential viewing necessarily, but a fun movie, good performances, beautiful woman. I mean, the woman in our main character here is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, William Castle knows how to pick his starlets. So I'll give him that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely could have used a little more horror. Again, I'm trying to kind of curb my negativity because it is a 1961 movie, and I have to accept that it's a 1961 movie. So I don't want to judge it like it was a 2024 movie by any stretch, but for what it is, I do really like it. I had a good time with it. I don't, you know, regret the time that I spent with it, and I may even return to it someday. I'm not against returning to it, in other words. It's a fun enough movie that I can watch it again. It just may not happen too soon.
Yeah. So
that's it for me.
All right, Derek.
Yeah, this is not a first-time watch for me. I've seen it. Like I said, I covered it with Duncan on the podcast Under the Stairs. So I'm going to go with this as like a second or third time. Because the first time I watched it was actually for that show. So I forget. But I'm going to go in as a second time review on it. And, you know, as known to the reveal is, I have to remember if I, because I don't even remember if I knew or not at the time. You know, I know it's kind of obvious now and rewatch more,
yeah.
You know, but the thing that I take away from it, I do get kind of bored because I do already know what's going down in that sense on a rewatch level of it. So that kind of hurted it for me. But overall, I still was like engaged with the movie. Like there's some actually like cool sequence, like that poor fucking lady that doesn't speak throughout this whole movie, she was fucking torturing the fuck out of her.
It was very whatever happened to Baby Jane. torturing the lady.
Yeah, and then it's kind of fucked up when we find out who that lady actually is. I'm like, rip, whoa. That's fucking crazy. That was like kind of the more crazy part of the reveal.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the fright breaks kind of, it's super hokey because it reminds me of movies that did it after, like that The Beast That Must Die movie that I was talking about with the vampire. They had the werewolf break. So, do you know which one's the werewolf? And it shows all the cast members again. You know, before, and spoiler alert, it's fucking Dumbledore that's the fucking werewolf.
That's
fucking Michael Gambon himself.
Sir Michael Gambit. Welcome to the layer cake, shorty. Yeah. Spoiler alert for The Beast Must Die. Fuck, hokey movie, but you know, you had a fun cast, Peter Cushing and Michael Gambon. Yeah. Come on, of course you're gonna watch that over fucking Homicidal. You know? Plus that was like this weird groovy like 70s score for that movie too, which even makes the fright break of that movie even more hilarious. Like it has like this weird like James Bond's music playing. So watching like an older version of that, it just brings back that fucking hokiness of that one for me. You know, it's because it's like you can't watch the movie 300 after you watch Meet the Spartans ever again. Because you just think of that movie.
And that's why I'll never watch Meet the Spartans.
Oh, it's fucking hilarious. Oh, my God. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, definitely not still an enjoyable watch, but I'm going to be honest. I prefer the second half of this double feature, but still a good pick, Mike. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like the fact that they had the art when they had her sketched out as far as who the killer was and the newspaper when he went into the shop. Sitting there on the, I'm like, you guys probably should have found this person a lot quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I have to admit, I actually do love the beginning part with William Castle because I just love that it turns into like the title card of the movie. And it's kind of cool. It's hokey, but it's cool. I actually like it. It's, you know.
I mean, it's very William Castle, so I can accept.
Yeah, it's kind of charming, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, cool. All right. Then we'll move right along to our second feature.
Don't profit. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this one really has kind of like that performance to really drive the movie. That would be Joan Crawford in William Castle's Straight Jacket. So the reason why I kind of made the joke about it being like Psycho too. After a 20-year stay at an asylum for a double murder, a mother returns to her estranged daughter where suspicions arise about her behavior. So like I said, this is really a vehicle for Joan Crawford. She plays the killer that was sent away to asylum. She's trying to reacclimate to life. And once she's back with her family, things start messing with her. There's that great scene in the barn with George Kennedy. That's awesome.
MVP of the movie.
Diane Baker's in this, who, you know,
love your suit.
Yeah, I think this movie is really well written. I love the performance in this, and we got the kills. So, yeah, Derek, I'll start with you with this one. Straight Jacket, tell me about it.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, I watched Straight Jacket and Serial Mom back to back. It was kind of weird. And actually, funny enough, Serial Mom actually has like Matthew Lillard's in that movie. And he's like a whore. He's like the Randy of that movie, which is weird because he's trying to kill Randy in another movie. Anyways, but yeah, and there's a scene where he's watching Straight Jacket with Joan Crawford in it. And that's before I watched Straightjacket because I was doing commentary with Lacey and then I was doing the show with Duncan in a few days. So I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, this is pretty kind of fucked up for that time period, watching it in another movie. But then I watched it and like, Straightjacket, fucking, like that whole beginning sequence, that's like one of the, it's like, you know, like, that's what the fucking beginning sequence of Pieces is from. That's where that came from, was that beginning sequence of this movie. And I love it. You know, it was very Lizzie Borden because, you know, that was kind of like the inspiration that Robert Block had for, like, the actual murder and shit that the movie starts out with. And Joan Crawford, man, like, going through, like, the backstory of, like, this when this movie was made is fucking crazy because, you know, like, she became, like, very heavily involved with the production. Like, there's actually an interview on the Blu-ray of, like, the original actress that was supposed to play her daughter. That she got fired from the movie and hired Diane Baker to play that role. Which, you know, Diane Baker is Diane Baker. She's like, I knew her from Silence of the Lambs before this, so it was kind of cool seeing her in something kind of similar earlier on. So it's kind of like cool to get that little like inch of like Jonathan Demme was a fan of Stray Jacket. That's why he put her in that movie. You know what I mean? So that was kind of cool. Like on the first time I watched this movie, the second time still holds up. I like the build up, like the cast of characters. Like George Kennedy is a great character actor. I love him even like some of the shittier B movies he did, like in the '80s and shit. And you know, it was good seeing him like give like a solid like side character performance in this as his asshole. It's pretty great. And the weirdest thing, like the weirdest actor of the movie was the head of Pepsi Cola is the doctor that comes. And she was just because it was her, that was Joan's company. She was friends with the head of, that's why she got him in the movie as to play that part. So that was very interesting, that aspect. She was heavily involved with the production. It was like she even had butted heads with William Castle during the production of this. When they went on a world tour, it was fucking crazy. That she was the gimmick of the movie, pretty much. Because it was like the biggest star that he's ever fucking worked with.
Yeah.
Through his time. Yeah,
it's interesting because I know growing up, like kind of my peer group, most everyone knew Joan Crawford because of Mommy Dearest. But then you look at her, wire hangers. Yeah, no wire hangers. But then you kind of look at her filmography and man, she just pumped out movies like back then. And she was a great character actor.
Yeah.
And
just like the backstory of like the feud with her and Betty Davis. I love that because I love Betty Davis too. Like, yeah, it's fucking great.
Yeah, and I know, Derek, you mentioned, like, I love kind of, like, the opening prologue of this. It just sets up the movie so well, and it's, like, so believable that, like, you know, she would snap at the sign of her husband having an affair, and I like the sound effects of, like, the axe chopping, and I just feel like this movie, it feels very fleshed out and, like, well-written, and I love how it plays out. I love kind of like the...
Yeah, I love the twist.
Is she getting crazy again? Or is something else going on? What is she murdering again? Or if not, then of course everyone's going to be suspicious of her given like the past. And the twist, I think, is really good. And it makes some kind of sense, you know? Well, actually, it really makes a lot of sense considering what we learned in the prologue. So like, yeah, I just think it's really well together. But Venom, what are your thoughts on Straight Jack? Is this a first time watch as well?
Yeah, once again, first time watch. William Castle is not someone that I gravitate towards. I've seen his popular stuff, obviously, you know, House on Haunted Hill, Tingler, stuff like that. But a lot of these more dramatic horror films that he's done, I've never seen almost any of these. So yeah, definitely a first time watch, and I fucking love this movie. This movie was really, really fun. And again, for 1964, really, really great gore. I mean, we get a really cool decapitation in what, the first 5 minutes of the film?
Yeah.
I mean, so that helps. And her performance, again, spectacular. I thought her daughter's performance was also really well done, because this one I did not see the twist coming. I had a feeling that she wasn't the killer, but I definitely didn't see the actual killer being who they were. Like, that was a shock. Yeah, I mean, they did kind of tip their hat earlier in the film when they showed her studio and they showed how she was making masks. So I guess, you know, if you're paying attention, they do tip their hat a little early. Yeah. Apparently, I wasn't paying attention. I didn't notice that the first time. But, yeah, great movie, good kills, good brutal kills for 1964, a good twist, great performances. I mean, some of the kills were silly. I thought the groundskeeper kill was maybe a little goofy, but, you know, considering how many great kills are in here, you know, I'll take the occasional not so great one. The fiance's parents, Like, I will never understand the mentality of antagonizing someone who you know was at a mental hospital. Like, why would you purposely antagonize that person? She's already killed someone. Why would you, you know, make fun of her or, you know, say, oh, your daughter will never marry my son? Like everything, that entire scene, that entire exchange made no sense to me. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like...
Blackmail and Batman.
Well, no. It's kind of like in Salem, Massachusetts. Like when somebody would accuse someone of being a witch, and then they would push it and push it and push it. And it's like, if you believe that woman's a witch, why would you continue fucking with her? See, that was the major, like, dichotomy, with the Salem witch trials. It's like, all you people are sitting here accusing these women of being witches, and men in some cases, yet they never do anything to defend themselves. They never, you know, and then to antagonize someone, like I said, who you think is a witch, doesn't make any fucking sense. Why would you do that? You know, it would be like if I thought my next door neighbor was a vampire and I went to all the trouble in the world to prove it. Why? What is the point? He's just going to fucking kill you. It's Fright Night all over again. So like I said, that entire scene with the fiance's parents giving her shit for being in a mental hospital, I'm like, why are you not treating this woman with kid gloves? You know what I mean? Why are you not speaking to her softly? Like, do you want her to rise up and cut your head off? Like, is that what you want? This is what I mean. Like, people, rich, arrogant, and I'm sorry if I'm being racist, but rich, arrogant white people, they think they're untouchable. So they think that they can antagonize someone like Joan Crawford's character and get away with it. Fuck you. If I was Joan Crawford, they would have been the first ones I killed. Not that she killed anybody after the first one. But, yeah, I've never understood that mentality ever, you know, of antagonizing someone that you think has power that could fuck you up. It doesn't make sense to me at all. So, yeah, that whole thing, that whole scene bothered me. I'm sure it bothers a lot of people. That's the intention of that scene, is to, you know, to see the prejudice of these two, you know, rich white people. And, oh, I've never been in a mental hospital, so it's obviously not normal. And since you've been in a mental hospital, there's something wrong with you. And it's like, honestly, I don't think there was anything wrong with Joan Crawford. She came home. Her husband was in bed with another woman. She cut their head off. You know what? I don't know that I would be any different. I'm sorry, my friends. I've been married to Mrs. Venom for 28 years. I love her like no man has ever loved a woman. If I come home and I find her in bed with another man, they're both fucking dead. Don't even – I'm not fucking with you. I will lose my shit. I will kill them both, and I'll spend the rest of my life in jail with a smile on my face. So I don't think Joan Crawford was all that fucking, you know, crazy to kill her husband and his mistress. Obviously, infidelity is not – murder is not a proper response to infidelity. I understand that. I do. But I've said it before a million times, and I'll say it again. I love petty and vindictive characters in horror movies because I myself am petty and vindictive. So, yeah, love this performance. Joan Crawford, awesome all the way. I mean, I love how she actually turns into the protagonist by the end of the film because I feel like she deserves it. And like I said, the twist I did not see coming. Absolutely, like it legit shocked me. You know, when she takes the mask off, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Wow, that is awesome. And this is another one where the motivation, like, I understand the motivation a little bit more here than Warren's motivation in the first movie. Because here, you know, the girl is, you know, she's concerned that her fiancé's parents won't accept her. But the thing is that she puts this plan into motion before she's even sure that the parents are going to reject her. Like, what if the parents didn't reject her? What if they welcomed them? Like, what if they welcomed the engagement right away? Suddenly you did all this shit to your mother for nothing. So, yeah, just definitely someone not thinking their plan through completely and getting caught. I mean, shit, that it's easy to get caught when you're this stupid. So, yeah, but overall, love the movie. Like, despite the killer being not ultra intelligent, with their plan, I still, you know, it still felt very organic. It still felt like something a daughter would do against her mother. Because during that first scene, too, during that opening scene, that was something I asked myself, like, what is this doing to the little girl? The little girl's literally witnessing her mother decapitate two people, one of them being her father, who I assume she loves dearly. So what is that going to do to that little girl? And by the end of the movie, we get our answer. We find out exactly what that did to the little girl. So, yeah.
Dexter.
I love this movie. Oh, Dexter. No, this girl is not as smart as Dexter. No. I understand the analogy. I do. But, yeah.
Dexter wasn't – she wasn't trained by a cop, though. That's why.
No, valid. She wasn't trained by anyone, very obviously. But, yeah, overall, really, really like this movie. This would get a strong recommend for me. If you're not familiar with William Castle stuff and maybe stuff like House on Haunted Hill or The Tingler are a little bit too hokey, this one is definitely more grounded in reality. There's a legitimate organic story here that makes sense, with an antagonist that makes sense, with motivation that makes sense, even though, like I said, it's a little blind, you know, it's kind of a little blindsided motivation, but still. So, yeah, overall, I'm very high on this movie. I liked it a lot. This is definitely one I'll be returning to.
Yeah.
Sounds like we'll have to do a William Castle Volume 2 in the future sometime.
Oh, I'd love you guys to get your guys' thoughts on The Nightwalker sometime.
I've never seen that.
It's another later day one with like Barbara Stanwyck. It's pretty fucking cool. Nice. It's kind of great atmosphere to it too.
Yeah, I like Barbara Stanwyck. She's a great actress.
Fuck yeah.
All right, cool.
Good posters for this movie too, by the way. I'm looking at the poster right now. This is
oh, I love it.
So much better than the homicidal poster, but this is cool.
Yeah.
Depicts asperders.
Yeah. Something like when you start, not you, but like the royal, like just people in general that haven't like explored like this era of cinema, I think it surprises a lot of people when they start venturing down like kind of like the 50s and the 60s. There's a lot of like messed up plots, like as far as like killers and reasons people are. It's to me like obviously it's missing the over the top special effects that you get in later years, but just like the actual stories themselves are straight up like crazy as far as like killers and what they're doing and why. It's like just as sinister as stuff you would find now, you know?
Yeah, like fucking Hammer did this movie, Don't Never Take Candy from Strangers. It's legitimately about like a pedophile. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and I think we did one on, I think we did this movie on the show when like the Peter Lorre movie where like,
M?
Yeah, just chopped off the hands to replace the hands. It's just crazy ass shit. Like that's just as like diabolical as things you would find now, you know? So it's like people have this idea that like, oh, all this crazy ideas came in recently. It's like, nope, it's been going on in cinema and predates cinema as well, because in horror books and stuff too. So it's like this kind of stuff has always been there. So don't be fooled by like the technology itself looking better now. It's craziness.
Somehow Palpatine returned.
That's the theme of the month.
Well, we at No More Room in Hell also shall return, but I think that's going to wrap up our talks on these two William Castle movies and episode 58, but we should let everyone know what we've been up to since, because it has been a smaller minute, but it has
Street
been
conference.
Yes, Venom, Derek, tell us, because you've got some mutuals out there, so what should people be listening to?
Okay, the latest episode of No More Room in Hell presents Creature Comforts is episode 24. On that episode, we looked at 1995 Species, as Derek mentioned earlier, so if you want to hear more deep thoughts on what I thought on the movie, and of course what Don and Derek also thought, go ahead and check out the latest episode that is available now. We also had the return of No More Room in Hell presents the Crystal Lake Gift Shop after a long hiatus. We're finally able to get back together, and we have our favorite temporary store clerk, Miss Lacey Liu, joining us for that episode. That is episode 4 of the podcast, where, of course, we looked at season 1, episode 4 of Friday the 13th, the series, and that episode was entitled A Cup of Time. And that episode is also available now, so check that out. I can go ahead and announce the next episode of Creature Comforts, because it's so rare that we know the movie that we're going to do the following month. But obviously,
featuring Michael Berryman?
There is a certain Japanese giant lizard who's releasing a new movie this month. Of course, Godzilla vs. Kong 2 opens in theaters, actually, a week from today. That's right. Today's the 22nd. So a week from today, Godzilla vs. Kong 2, The New Empire, opens. And we will, of course, be reviewing that on Creature Comforts as soon as we can get together after we've all seen it. Try to get that review out while it's still fresh. And then, of course, you know, always look out for our weekly episodes of Fresh Cuts, where we look at the newest releases in the horror genre. Though sometimes we will dip into thriller, and most recently we kind of dipped into documentary, just because there was we couldn't really find a movie to review that week. There was nothing in theaters, and nothing on VOD really looked promising. That was actually the week of Frogman, when Frogman was potentially going to be our Fresh Cuts movie, but we made a last-minute audible and went and did the Dario Argento documentary Panico. Our latest episode of Fresh Cuts, well, the next one is obviously going to be Late Night with the Devil. Our last episode was, what, Imaginary? Have we done something since Imaginary? I forget.
I think it was Imaginary, yeah, before. Wait, yeah, I'm pretty sure Imaginary was the last one.
Okay, so the latest episode of Fresh Cuts is Imaginary. Join Mike, Don, and myself as... like I said, that podcast comes out every week. We look at the latest releases. Late Night with the Devil is next. Immaculate is going to be after that. And I would imagine Abigail will be the next one very shortly after that one. So, yeah, Fresh Cuts you can catch every week on the Dark Discussions Podcast Network. That is, of course, darkdiscussions.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. And I think that's it for me.
All right, Derek, anything to add to that?
Nothing. That's it. Let's go home.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I've been up to, is what Venom's mentioned as well.
We should just do like a recorded one and just say bye from now on.
Just record it. That's awesome. You know, I was on a podcast a couple of years ago where they recorded all the segments separately, so that the host could edit them all separately, and then he would put the episode together the way he liked it, rather than the way we do it, where we just kind of, we have our format, we talk and go. Yeah, and, which was weird, because I had to get together with him like 2 or 3 times to do a 1-hour podcast, because we kept recording segments by themselves. I don't know how efficient that is, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah, you know what? We did stop motion. I forgot, yeah.
Oh, stop motion is the latest episode. That's right. Even though stop motion, Mike and I saw in theaters last month, but it got a VOD release this week. So, yeah, stop motion is actually the latest episode. Late Night with the Devil is next week.
Stop motion with me. Stop motion with me.
So I believe, if I'm not wrong, the rotation will go back to Venom. More room.
That's it. Yup.
Oh, boy.
Get ready for the gore, my friends. I'm bringing the blood.
Oh, so you got yourself
picked
out. I don't
know. I haven't picked the actual movies yet, but yeah, they're gonna be extreme.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's gonna be a juicy episode.
Oh no!
The juice is getting loose.
Oh no!
All right. Well, keep that. That's a promise you'll have to live up to for us and the listeners.
I hope it's not the movie with the spoon.
Oh, no.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think I do, yeah. No, I'm going to be, I'm bringing some obscure stuff, too. I mean, it's going to be bloody, juicy, and obscure, not mainstream, so look out for that.
Ooh. All right. Now I'm a little afraid, but excited at the same time. So, With that said, we're descending
American
back
Guinea Pig trilogy
into the Lake of Fire. American Guinea Pig resides in the Lake of Fire as well.
Where it should be, actually, yes.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
boy.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of No More Room in Hell. We will catch you next time. Let's say bye to our listeners.
Bye.
Stop antagonizing crazy people.
Stop motion with me.
Keep the axe out of sight.
Yes.